three ball from CG43. They're in front.
This is flat out ridiculous.
From the beautiful left hand, in and out finish, the old fashioned way.
Newell gets to the basket with one to come. From there again. You have got to be kidding me. Tyson Steph.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. We're into the free agency period. The Jack Jumpers have made a few signings, but we're not actually going to talk about all that today. Today, we're going to do something very different, and this is in response to a number of emails I've got. From people in and out of the sort of sporting sphere or sporting business who want to know about podcasting, how it's done, how it rates, all the monetary issues. If you're out there and have listened to my recent interview with Paul Shirley about his book, Ball Boy, where we talk about, you know, how he got his books published and the financial side of things, I was very impressed by Paul's openness and honesty about talking about, you know, what at this stage is kind of the failures of his book to sell. And I thought, I've been cagey about how this podcast works and the financial input of it. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to sort of open the lid on everything, from ratings, listens, money, the whole thing. So I hope people out there are going to enjoy it. This episode is going to have particularly appealing to people who are, one, thinking about starting a podcast, people who have a podcast and want to try and monetize it. Good luck, but there will be some blueprint given. And then also about how the NBL sits in the sporting podcast space, but also the NBL, and this podcast, the NBL Pocket Podcast, sits within the sphere of NBL media and where it's at with numbers and things, as best I can tell through my small little keyhole of this podcast and its numbers. So let's jump in. This is NBL podcasting top to bottom. As I've said, I get a lot of messages and emails from people asking me how I do the podcast, how many people listen, and the potential of podcasts as an enterprise. So here we go. I'm going to jump into it in great detail. What equipment do I use? This is the first question I get. Well, my setup is very, very simple. I have an Apple Mac computer. I'm speaking into it right now. I use a Blue Yeti microphone. It's what they call a USB plug and play microphone. It's about $150. To host the show, to get it up on the internet and actually store the audio files, I use a thing called Audio Boom. Really good program. Or a really good service. There are others out there that do the same thing. You record your voice, you put it up, and it will automatically take, you know, you'll upload the audio file. You'll give it a title, put in the detailed descriptions, click the box of whether it's got swearing in it or not, and then they will distribute it on your behalf to Spotify, Apple Podcasts, a whole bunch of other services. Now, sometimes to get them on the smaller services, you have to sort of click a box or send an email, get a verification code, but I find the Audio Boom makes it very, very easy to do that. There's Podbean, there's others. I found this one. It was $9.99 a month. I thought that was reasonable. I didn't want to do it. I hate admin, so I just went with it. So Audio Boom is the answer to that. What do I use to record it? Well, if I record a show by myself like I'm doing now, I use Audacity. And Audacity is a free-to-download, I wouldn't say app, but it's a program. Free to download, and you can use that and you record your own voice. I encourage everyone to have it on their computer. It's good if you need to, in these COVID times, record a birthday wish for someone overseas or, geez, next door, the way things are going. Really good program to have that. And you can edit on it. We'll talk about editing in a second. I don't use it for that purpose. I just record on it. You can record in WAV format, MP3. These things don't mean a lot to me, and they probably don't mean a lot to you either, but you can Google them and they make sense. But more importantly, free to download, and it is kind of an industry standard. You can do a lot of things with it, so I recommend that one. If I'm recording the show with Andrew, actually we'll talk about that in a later section, but let's talk about editing. To edit the show, I'm very lucky because with my work, I have a free monthly subscription to Adobe Premiere Pro, which I now use to edit the show. I get that for free, but if you just went with audio Adobe Premiere, which you can edit both sound and video on, that's $20 a month. As I said, I get it for free, but before I started using that, I used a program called Final Cut Pro. Again, these are not programs that are designed for voice especially. There are some very involved audio editing softwares. I've never bothered with them. But I used Final Cut Pro before that. Again, Final Cut Pro, video and audio. It was a one-time fee of $300. And, you know, it's good. You get to do both. So if you've ever seen any of my video content out there, typically I use Final Cut Pro. Until recently, I'm starting to sort of move over to Premiere Pro, which I think is a better program. But if you don't want to have a subscription to another thing, if you're out there and you've got Netflix, Stan, and a whole bunch of other stuff you're subscribing to, and you just want to pay a one-time fee, Final Cut Pro might be where you want to go. I think Final Cut Pro is certainly easier to use. It's more sort of click and drag. It's got more sort of automation settings that make things easier, little sound bites you can drag in and things like that. Whereas Premiere Pro allows you to do a lot more and a lot faster, but you kind of, there's a steeper learning curve is what I'll say. I will say this, there is no skimping on this stuff. If you have a bad microphone, you're not going to sound good. People aren't going to listen. If you can't edit the show, you're going to have mistakes and then they're going to be in there and you're going to look like a twat and people aren't going to listen. So, and then Audio Boom, if you try and host the show yourself and it kind of gets lost in the wherever, you know, you got to pay these small fees. And once you get past that initial startup cost, it's really only a tenner a month plus, you know, if you're billing for your time. So not too bad. As I said, you could edit in Audacity. I found it cumbersome, so I don't. And I had other options, so I took them. But if you wanted to save even more money and not get either Final Cut Pro or Premiere and audio software, you could use that. Let's talk about recording. As I said, if I'm doing a solo episode like I do now, I use Audacity, free to download. If I'm chatting with a guest, I use there's a couple of options I can use. Skype, well familiar, but now Skype's being kind of phased out. It's less reliable. It doesn't sound as good. So Zoom is a good one. People are very familiar with it. And more importantly, with Zoom, a person doesn't have to have it downloaded on their computer to access it. Whereas Skype, you needed an actual Skype login. And some people didn't have that or forgot the password, blah, blah. Whereas Zoom is great. So Zoom has eclipsed Skype. I barely ever use Skype anymore. But then preferably, I use Zencastr. Now, Zencastr depends on how tech savvy the guest is because they kind of need to have a login for Zencastr as well, I think. Maybe not actually. You can tell me. But Zencastr is basically Zoom for podcasting exclusively. This is the program when I have Andrew on. We use that. Sometimes when we did that three-way episode with Botti, we did Zencastr with that as well. Zencastr will let you record for free. It's free to download if you're just talking to one other person, so two people. Whereas when we had Botti, we had to use Andrew's account because that was a pay account. Because when you have more than two, you have to have a sort of, again, a subscription to Zencastr Pro or Zencastr Premiere or whatever it is. If I need to record a phone call with a guest, now this is obviously the best way to do an interview because everyone's got a phone and everyone's pretty accessible to that phone. So you can call a guest as they're running errands or, you know, they're driving or not driving, hands-free hopefully. But, you know, you can get guests like that. But the problem is a phone is designed to talk to a person. It's not really designed to record someone's voice so that the quality's not great. There are a lot of options you can do to record phone interviews. I found them to be expensive and time-consuming, and I just didn't bother with it. So my setup is really crude, and it does not produce the best sound quality. So I try and avoid organizing guests on the phone. But let's say when I had Lindsay Gaze, that was done over this phone system. He, you know, not that he's not tech-savvy, but he's an older gentleman, and it was just easier to do it over the phone. So you take the hit in sound quality for the convenience of, to appease your guest. As I said, my setup is very crude. I use a digital sound recorder with an earpiece that plugs into it, and it actually has a microphone in the earpiece. So you can imagine I've got the little dictaphone type sound recorder, a headphone jack that goes in. It's only on one ear. It plugs into my right ear, and you know the sound goes into my ear, but on the back of the earpiece is a little microphone. So I have the actual mobile phone to my head, into this microphone earpiece, and then down and records into the sound recorder. And that's how it goes. And then I also record, and then the sound recorder also records my voice. So it's kind of a weird setup, but that's what I use. And I think it works quite well. But that's why it's quite primitive. That recorder is $65. So you can go out and get those H4 splitters. They're about $300. If you want to do that, you will definitely get a better sound, and if you want to make that investment, do it. I just never have. People don't really ask this one much, but scripting. Sadly, due to the frantic nature of this season with so many games so often crammed in, Andrew and I, we didn't really have a chance to script a lot of shows. We just kind of had a couple of talking points. You know, I might have a topic that we're going to talk about, or Andrew might have a topic, and then maybe a dot point or two off from that, or in a key stat or whatever. But my advice to anyone scripting is to do a little rundown and make sure you hit your topics, but is try and stick to the rule of three. A subject only really has 3 points of vital information or interesting information. So be selective. Any more than three becomes boring, and it becomes unnecessary and therefore probably boring. So there is the best way to think about scripting. There's a YouTube video, Ernest Hemingway's four tips to good writing. I think everybody should read that, whether you're writing a birthday card, a farewell to someone at work. You should always implore those principles and improve your writing as best you can. Now, as pretentious as this sounds, this is the best advice I can give to people speaking into a podcast, because there's one thing to be a good writer, but you also have to, you know, be an orator. You have to talk it. And this is pretentious, but the best advice comes from Jack Kerouac, author of On the Road. I mention that book all the time, but he basically has this quote: "The only people for me are the mad ones, the ones who are mad to live, mad to talk, mad to be saved, desirous of everything at the same time, the ones who never yawn or say a commonplace thing." And that's the line I like the most at the end there. Say a commonplace thing. Never say a commonplace thing. Think broadly and speak honestly, and then you will avoid saying a commonplace thing. In anything, your thoughts on a topic, the way you say it, all that stuff. Never say a commonplace thing. Always try and be different. Let's jump on. So that's how the show is actually nuts and bolts, you know, put together and made. So it gets made, it gets sent out. You know, I have the Twitter account, and you know, you can work out how to copy links from Apple Podcasts and Spotify. That's not difficult to work out. But now let's talk about the listenership. How many people actually listen to this podcast? How many have? And let's do it. Not many people discuss this, but I'm very open. I don't mind. So the NBL Pocket Podcast has, in its lifetime, which is about 2.5 seasons or something, has 79,000 listens in its lifetime. I think I rounded up fractionally from 78,000, but I checked that last week. So 79,000 listens in its lifetime. That's over 184 episodes. Now, I actually just put up another episode with Paul Shirley since, but we'll go off these numbers as I had them at the time. So 79,000 listens. That's over 184 episodes. That's an average of about 427 per episode. Obviously, the first couple of months, I'd be surprised if any more than 20 people were listening, and rightfully so. Those episodes were dreadful. They were, you know, you got to start somewhere. To put it in perspective, the biggest episode or the most listened to episode of the NBL Pocket Podcast has been listened to 1,141 people. And to put it in perspective, this week, the podcast has been listened to 524 times this week. Now, that means that people may have listened to the most recent podcast, or maybe they've found one of those evergreen episodes with like Lindsay Gaze or Paul Shirley or Worthington or whoever the guest may be. Maybe they've found that and listened to it. So going by how many listens you get in a week is kind of a more accurate metric than how many people listen to the most recent one, because, you know, maybe some people catch up on they're a week behind or what have you. So 524 listens this week. The typical range is anywhere from 500 to 700. That's been the range this year. Last season, when the games were more predictable and when the games were typically on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, maybe a Monday night game very occasionally, and the episode would come out on a Tuesday, there was more time for people to breathe. There was more time for people to sort of digest the last round, come to the podcast and go forward. So typically last season, the listens per week were around 750 to 1,000, no word of a lie, which is obviously better. Now, 525 listens this week or 750,000 weekly last year, those numbers may seem like a lot or they may seem like very little. I don't really know in the grand scheme of podcasts. You know, you only really hear about Joe Rogan's numbers, which are, you know, 10,000 a week. So 525 seems piddly, minuscule, pathetic. But think of it this way. And I don't know if it's a lot or not, but think of it this way. If you're a stand-up comedian or a saxophone player or a pianist in a hotel lobby, if someone came to you and said, I can guarantee you an audience of 524 people a week, or even 450 people a week, a number like that, that person would take that. Most saxophone players are playing to rooms of 30. Most stand-up comedians are playing to rooms of 100 tops. And think about it this way. If you get 400, let's say 450 people a week, right? It's kind of sitting in the middle somewhere. Those performers would take that because if you're playing to 450 people and they're each paying a cover charge of $10, that's $4,500 a week from that audience. That's $23,500 a year for an hour's work a week, 52 hours work in a year. And you're getting, well, that's more than a DP makes. Something to think about. Those professions, musicians, comedians, what have you, they're lucky that they have the ingrained idea of people pay to see that. People are very happy to go and pay and see a stand-up comedian when you could easily just Google it and see it free on YouTube. But it's that ingrained, I'm going having a night out, that pay to see is ingrained. Podcasts don't have that luxury. Podcasts started, just sprung out of nowhere, and they were for free. So they came to the negotiating table, the economic negotiating table with their pants down, and now it's hard to bargain back from that. And if you know any teachers, they'll tell you that the rule is don't smile until Easter. In other words, be strict up until, you know, the first month or two of the school year, then you can relax with the students a bit. If you come in loosey-goosey, necktie down, yeah, do whatever you want, and then you want to tighten them back up, you know, cat's out of the bag, you're in trouble. So it's kind of the same thing in reverse for podcasts. Now let's talk about moolah, money made, right? And you'd be surprised. Well, maybe you would, maybe you wouldn't, but I'll tell you anyway about the podcast and where money comes from. So the podcast kind of generates a bit of revenue through a couple of ways. Booktopia, the link, you may hear me talking about that. The Patreon, selling copies of Marvelous, Body's book. And I think that's it. Yeah, so let's go through Booktopia first. So the Booktopia link has had a total in its lifetime, and I think I've only had that for, while the show's been operating for 2.5 seasons, really only had that for about a season and a half. But anyway, in its lifetime, it's had 210 clicks and 11 actions or sales. So I don't know how much money I get per click. It's minuscule, maybe a fraction, 2 cents. I don't know. I really, it's not that amount of money that I concern myself with. But 11 actions is sales. So books are anywhere from, you know, $25 to, you know, sometimes 50 plus. You know, I think Gaze's book, Lindsay Gaze's book was around about 50 or so. All in all, the NBL Pocket podcast through the Booktopia link has sold $478.55 worth of product, of which this podcast receives a grand total of $14. So Booktopia ain't exactly putting food on the table. Right? And I don't begrudge Booktopia for that. They're in the business of selling books, not making me rich. And I get that. Patreon, however. Patreon is a good one. I like Patreon very much. The podcast has had as many as 15 Patreon subscribers. I think it now sits at 10. So I'll take this point in the podcast to say a big thank you to all the corner pocketeers. That's Andrew, Ryan, Nick Tan, the Tan Man, Ben, Jono, Mason, David, Michael, and Nick. Thank you all very much, because it is essentially at this point just a charity. I had hoped to want to do exclusive content, talk a bit of shite through Patreon, but this season's been that rapid. I just haven't had the chance. So the gentlemen and women that go through Patreon, I appreciate it very much. So each pocketeer, as mentioned, very generously pays $4 a month. So it's $1 a week. I thought $1 an episode is, I still think they're overpaying, but I'm, you know, thank you again. So that's $40 a month, 10 times four. And that's been since September 2020. So I'll let you do your own maths on how much that's made in its lifetime. But the big money spinner in a way has been selling copies of Marvelous. So, you know, Body and I sold about $1,000 worth of that book. I don't know the exact number because I think we sold the book for about $30. I sold the best part of about 35 copies of it, and we split the profits down the middle. Now, we sell that through eBay, so eBay do charge you to have a PayPal account. They charge you a certain amount to advertise. So I think I've sold $1,000 worth of books, but you know, there's been a few hits along the way to have that account open. I think it's like sort of 10, 15 bucks every couple of months. I really should have tracked that better, but I find eBay really cumbersome to work with. And if you sell on there, maybe there's a trick to it. You can get in touch with me, but I haven't quite enjoyed their interface, but nonetheless. So all in all, the show runs a profit, which I'm pretty proud to say. Now, it's not a lot because you get the $40 a month from Patreon, so deducted by the $10 that the Audio Boom charges to host it. And then you get a little, tiny little bit of scaric a bit of money from Booktopia. And then if I started selling something else, perhaps that'd go well. But that's the money side of the podcast. So if you're trying to make your own, hopefully you can use that as a guide. Now, going on to Booktopia, people might ask, how did I get that affiliate? Well, the simple thing is most of these companies have a podcast affiliate thing lined up. I just sent Booktopia a email because I thought maybe they want to sponsor the show just outright. And I got an email back saying, oh, we have a podcast affiliate, use these links. It's actually quite, takes care of itself, but as you can see, it's not particularly lucrative. So I don't know if I'd recommend it or not. You'd have to be a very good salesperson to make it work for you, but it is an option and one that's easily required. I think the most important thing is you need to be selling a product of your own at your own, you know, that you control the costs of, you know, whether it's a book or craft or merch, whatever it is, but sell something people want, for heaven's sake. I did have something else I was going to talk about here as far as money goes. Oh yeah. So as far as advertising goes, I've never been able to secure an advertiser. But essentially you're looking at about, for every 1,000 listens that your show gets a week, you can charge, you know, I think it's $15, $16 per 30 seconds. So, you know, when you hear a podcast and they stop halfway through and they go, hey, ever thought about getting a new mattress or ever thought about shaving your head or whatever it is? Those are called little rolls. There's a better name for them, but something roll. And it's a little advertising, and you know, 30 seconds costs an advertiser $16 for every 1,000 listens. So you got to be right up there to be profitable with those. You know, this podcast barely scraps 1,000, so you can make $16 a week doing that. But $16 for 1,000. You know, if you can make it work, good for you. Bit of a departure here, so I want to talk about where the NBL Pocket Podcast sits in sort of the second tier NBL media or sports space. But before I do that, I want to talk about the first tier media. I don't know if that's a term. I think I've used that. I don't know if that's a real term. But anyway, I want to give a shout out to my favorite guy working in, you know, quote unquote first tier media. He's doing some great stuff on the keyboard, writing basketball articles. That's Matt Logue. He writes really good stuff. He throws in a few breaking stories, a few sort of rumory pieces, but he throws it in with, you know, stuff about the Boomers and keeps the NBL in touch. And he does a really good job of amalgamating the NBL, the Boomers, and the NBA. Often you'll read one of his articles and it'll be about Ryan Brokoff withdrawing from the Boomers, but also re-signing with the Phoenix and also, you know, something else. So it's, you know, Boomers, NBA, NBL. And I like the way he does that. And as a result, I like him. Also, I have chatted to Matt only in, you know, text messages on Twitter or whatever like that. He seems like a nice guy, and we've met in person extremely briefly. Seems like a genuine nice guy, so I wish him well. He's one of my favorites. Now let's go on to, where does this show, NBL Pocket Podcast, sit in the second tier NBL media space? And by the way, I've pointed out Matt Logue. There are others who are good, but he's the one who just sprung to my mind, so if you're listening out there and you feel offended by that, don't be precious. But where does the show sit in the second tier NBL media space? In other words, how does it rate compared to the competition? And I don't even like to call it a competition. I believe a rising tide lifts all boats. But anyway, it's a hard question to answer because numbers on these things are rare. And by numbers on these things I mean other podcasts and around. And for some other people, not all are quite cagey or self-conscious about answering these types of questions, how many listens they get, what the show does. I don't know if it's fear or embarrassment Or maybe they don't want to gloat. It's possible, but I respect their privacy in a way. Like, you don't want to talk about it, you don't want to talk about it with me, it's fine. But let's go into it as best I can answer this question. So Apple and Spotify do not release their numbers. And their charts can be misleading. It's my impression that those charts, the Apple popularity charts and the Spotify, they are done primarily on new listens per week, as well as adding in your base subscribership. So just because something's higher on the list doesn't necessarily mean it's being listened to pure. It's not just a pure metric of, you know, this was listened to the most, second most, third most. There's a different algorithm to it. And I still haven't worked it out. And I've Googled this online and it's hard to tell. Chartable is a website. Chartable.com is a reliable measure of the charts, or more reliable measure of the charts. But, you know, podcasters, again, can remove their podcast from consideration or put it in a, you know, you could do a sports podcast, but label it on Chartable as a show about gardening. And obviously it won't rate in that category. So you can still kind of, a crappy podcast could, or a podcast that's trumping itself up could still hide its numbers on there. Again, so not ironclad. But let's look at it this way. I looked at the Spotify charts, I think about 4 or 5 days ago. No NBL show is in the top 50 on the Spotify charts. Now, how accurate they are, I don't know. But nonetheless, no, none of them in the top 50. Rogue Bogues, which occasionally, Andrew Bogut's podcast, which occasionally broaches on the NBL, is 20th. And that was of, what, June 27. So that was, yeah, 3 or 4 days ago. The Apple podcast charts on Chartable are more specific. So Spotify will just have sports and it'll whack them down. Whereas Apple Podcasts on through Chartable's website will be more specific. So it will be, you know, Apple Podcasts sports categories, you know, badminton, cricket, basketball, so on and so forth. And by country, I think. So you can get quite specific. So looking at that chart, there are a couple of NBL shows that sit within. So on Spotify, so on Apple, they have sports, basketball. So within this category on there, Ball in the Real World sits 9th, NBL Podcast sits 35th, Brad and Botty 36th, Trash Talk 55th, and then NBL Pocket Podcast 116th. I mean, that's not very good. It sits 44th all time. I don't know what that is. I don't really look at this stuff. I'm inquisitive about it, but I don't really look into it too much. But Apple reviews are funny. So let's go on from the charts. The Apple reviews, and I'd read all mine. I like the bad ones, I like the good ones. They're all great. But the NBL Pocket Podcast has 54 ratings with an average of 4 stars. I don't know if that's good or not. And whether it makes an impact on the charts, I have no idea. I will say it's funny to click on the names of bad reviews. So you'll get a bad review that's like, this is tripe, or the host sounds like a cock. They do make me laugh. But you'll click on the name or highlight the name and Google it and paste it to see if they've reviewed other stuff. And results do come up. And it does make me laugh when you see that, you know, a bad review on this show will have, it'll come up like, you'll Google the name and it'll come up, you know, the bad review of this show or other shows. And say a certain account will have trashed mine, but only have one other review, and it's a positive review of another NBL show. So it's clearly someone who either hosts that or works behind the scenes on that show, and that makes me laugh. I do review other podcasts on there. Typically, I give favorable reviews because although I don't listen to those shows anymore, I certainly listened to most of them, if not all of them, when I first started to get a gauge on what was going on in the space. I sadly just don't have the time to listen to them anymore. Every now and again, I'll tune in to some of them. The Huddle is one of my favorites. The others, I just haven't engaged. I'm so sorry to say, I haven't engaged with them. That's not to say they're bad. I'm not saying that at all. But yeah, I give them favorable views because when I have listened to the past, they're good. They're good. And I'm glad they exist. The more the merrier. A rising tide lifts all boats. But as much as I've gone on about the podcasts and the charts and so on and so forth, and how inaccurate they are, there is a more precise metric. And that is through castbox.fm. And I had a listener who wanted to remain anonymous pass on to this information to me, that Castbox was had this public numbers on podcasts, both this one and others. So castbox.fm will give its own listens and subscription numbers. It won't give how much a show has got in total. it'll show you how many people are listening to a particular podcast through CastBox. Why that's important, or why that's, you know, usable, is the fact that, well, if you have a podcast and it's on Apple, which is, you know, 45% of podcasts, people listen to podcasts through that service, and it's on Spotify, and another 45% listen through there. So, but there's still that 10% that's broken up. So CastBox is only a small percentage of that. But you can extrapolate those numbers to get a greater picture. Let's go ahead and do that. Take, for example, NBL podcasts, right? On there, they go Overtime, The Huddle, etc. On CastBox, its numbers have 63 subscribers and 3,220 times played using that podcast provider exclusively. This is all public info, so you can check it for yourself. Now, obviously, the listenership to NBL podcast is bigger than that. It doesn't have 63 subscribers, and it's got more than 3,220 listens over its lifetime. That's just through CastBox. But let's think of it this way, okay? NBL Pocket Podcast has 78,000 listens in total. 2,343 have come through CastBox. Now, if my math is correct, and I did this while I was... I honestly wrote this on the back of an envelope while I was on the toilet, but that 2,343 of 78,000 is 3%. So using that as a base, I think it's safe to say that NBL Podcasts has a total listenership of, or a total number of listens in its lifetime of 107,195 over its 180 episodes, which is about 595 average listens per episode, or 595 listens per episode on average. That's considering that, you know, those 2,000, what was it? Oh, geez, all these numbers. Yeah, that the original 3,220, let's say that, like it does represent of this podcast, represents a 3% value. You extrapolate it, and that's your number you get. So, but the main thing to take away is I think the NBL podcast itself would have a listenership of anywhere from 550 or 600 through to 750 per week in total. So, and you know, that's not a huge number for a league, and we'll talk about how that sits in comparison to the AFL and NRL, but it does say that CastBox kind of removes any ego that second tier media may have had about itself. It certainly takes away my ego. Looking at the other guy, all the other NBL podcasts on this, so Aussie Hoopla, 159 subscribed, 3,526 listens. I think it actually tops the list. So congratulations to Dan Boyce, Aussie Hoopla. Subscribe and listen to that. It's got some great interviews. Trash Talk, 67 subscribed, 2,069 listens. The Basketball Show, 9 subscribed, 42 plays. Besson and Greenway, which I don't think they do that show anymore, but 23 subscribed, 1,334 played. NBL Roundtable, 5 subscribed, 61 plays. Ball in the Real World, 12 subscribed, 189 played. And to put that in perspective, what was NBL Pocket Podcast? Had it here before. NBL Podcast was 63 subscribed, 3,220. I've only got my total listens, not subscribers, but 2,343 was my played through that service. So, and to put all those numbers in comparison, like Rogue Bogues through CastBox, 439 subscribed, 7,203 plays. So, you know, mops the floor with all. But then let's look at something else from a different code. As I said, Rogue Bogues, 439. No NBL show other than Hoopla's over 100. He's over 150. All the others are under 100. The Triple M Rocks Footy AFL. Never heard of it. 4,695 subscribed, 205,155 plays. It monsters the others. Now, the important things to remember here is, you know, maybe they advertise to listen to it through CastBox. I know that I don't advertise it to people. Hey, get the show on CastBox. You know, I push it on Apple and Spotify. They're the most recent ones, the most popular podcast ways to listen. So maybe they push it through CastBox. Also, maybe that show's been running for a lot longer than all the NBL ones, and including, I mean, Roe Bogues has only been around for what, a couple of months, 6 months or so? Maybe a year, I don't know. So, you know, there's factors that come into play. Obviously, you're going to get more total listens the longer you've been operating as a podcast, but the subscribed is the one. But also, if you've been around for a longer time, you build that repetition, and whether you do a show monthly, whether you do a show weekly, obviously changes the listen. So these numbers are not ironclad where you point and laugh and say, oh, that's not very many. It's all relative, but it's a metric, and it's one of the few public ones. So it is worth taking it on. So what does this all tell us? I mean, it tells me that the NBL is a long way to go. And it tells me that the NBL should have pride in itself, and people putting out NBL content should certainly be proud of what they do. The work is good, but they shouldn't have an ego. These numbers are not like shut the F up money. It's not that guy. It's not that. It would not do that to your ego. If these are the podcast numbers, I can only assume the numbers for the written stuff is the same. We're looking at an avid fan base of NBL basketball at anywhere between 500 and 1,000 nationwide. And the definition of avid fan is people who seek out content on the league and people who spend a certain amount of hours interacting with the product. AFL would have a couple of mil, I can only assume. It looks as though basketball's got, the NBL, pardon me, has got maybe 1,000. That's what these numbers tell me. Maybe they tell you something different. Contact me on Twitter with what you think. But as I said, about the written stuff would be the same. Perhaps less. I don't know what people do engage with written stuff. I really don't know. But I think also, furthermore, what it tells us is there is a degree of charity or an investment in the promise of improvement when investing in NBL media based, when investing in media based around the NBL. It couldn't be self-contained. There doesn't seem to be a huge amount of people interacting with the content. Let's look at Bogut. I mentioned Roe Bogut. Bogut is popular. And I'm not surprised that the league was stronger with him as a vocal and visual part of it in NBL 19 and 20. As much as some might hate to admit that. The other thing to consider as well is that Australians don't really engage with podcasts for local content, it seems. International stuff rates really well, like Zach Lowe, Bill Simmons, and some EPL soccer stuff rates, you know, incredibly well on those charts. It would be my contention that Australians get their local or domestic content elsewhere, like the print, the web, the TV. That's why I look at sort of the basketball show. They wouldn't get big podcast numbers, I don't think, because I don't think they do it on there. Do a podcast anymore. They push it all through like Fairfax. They're on like got little Twitter vids and they pop up on Facebook and stuff like that. So they wouldn't really get people listening through Apple Podcasts or Spotify. They'd get it elsewhere. So that's an important thing to remember when you're looking at these numbers as well. So I think they get that. But I hate to say it, but the NBL needs Bogut involved in its media. Right, Bogut just signed on to do commentary for the Olympics. He needs to be in the NBL media. The numbers are undeniable. It's a real loss and a bit of a fail that Andrew Bogut returns from the NBA, plays in the NBL, retires, and then starts his own podcast about the NBA, cars, and himself. No NBL segment? It's a big missed opportunity. I think obviously a big missed opportunity for the NBL, but also I think for Bogut himself. You know, commenting on the NBA, I haven't listened to the show in a long while, and I'm sure he's good at it. However, he's worlds removed. You know, he's doing it from Melbourne, you know, and I think I even saw on Instagram, Clay Thompson kind of gave him a smack saying like, man, you're not in the clubhouse. You don't know what's going on, you know. I think Clay Thompson made a fair point. Not to discredit the show, but, you know, there's beat writers who are right there on the NBA scene. There's not really that for the NBL. And, it was Bogut's chance to pick up that flag. And he was the guy to do it. But anyway, he's gone a different direction. He can do whatever he wants with his podcast. I'm just talking out loud. Yeah, on the other hand, though, having said all that, you know, Bogut's got a loose and venomous tongue at times. Would he go rogue and turn it on guys in the NBL who are making far less money than he ever did or presumably does? I think the imports would cop it, but I don't think the NBL is ready or equipped for someone to start giving an educated and honest biting appraisal of the play. I don't think it's at that that level yet. I think there'd be, it would just feel cruel, which is that comes with getting bigger and better. I think there needs to be a recalibration of NBL media. I put out a tweet a little while ago asking people if they listen to the NBL on the radio. The response was lukewarm. Some said, yeah, kind of do when I catch it or whatever else. And I just don't understand who in 2020 is choosing to listen to the game on the radio. So only listen to the game when they can log on to Twitch and watch the game with official commentary for the same price. It's free on Twitch and you can actually watch it with commentary. And if you're busy doing the shopping or washing the dishes or hanging out watching, you can still have that game on, prop your phone up on the windowsill, have a headphone on or the speakers on and listen to it and occasionally look over at the game. I don't know why people would turn on the radio. I don't get that. Listen, I agree that the radio is popular in the time of the fucking King's Speech circa 1939. Who's listening to the radio? I haven't touched a radio in years, maybe in the car. A lot of people did respond. They listened to it in the car. That's fair enough. But most radio now is you seek it out. You stream, your podcast into your speaker or whatever. So the radio mystifies me. But anyway, I think each team should have its own commentator and commentary team pumped over a Twitch stream through its own socials. So, you could get two guys in Perth doing it. This is Josh Gallup and someone else. Whoever else they foolishly hemorrhaged from that commentary team, get them on and they're doing the Perth Wildcats feed and they're homers. Not saying that those guys are, homers, but they're doing a Perth broadcast for Perth fans through their socials. I think that'd be great. And then every team has their own commentators. That means you get Worthington back and he can do Perth games. You get whoever you want in Adelaide. I don't know, Joey Wright or... Probably not Joey Wright, now that I think about it. I don't think they'd want him doing that. You get Cam Tregar back doing something in up in Cairns and Brisbane. Sydney, you could have former player, Bogut, I don't know, whatever. Do whatever you want. I think that would be a better use than the radio. And I'm not saying don't give radio callers the right to have a free broadcast position at games. They should absolutely be there. But the number of people engaging with podcasts, I would think, would be higher than that of the radio. And therefore, a proportionate support would be nice. Obviously, I have a bias. I have the podcast. But I'd like to see a sweeping investment in all the podcasts, I'm not saying it's either one or the other, radio or podcast. I'm saying it could be both. Another thing about written game reports, are people reading these in 2020? I've missed games and never read them. The focus on the video. There's no better way to embellish your players and all your on-camera personnel. And you've made the investment in the cameras and the film. You may as well pump it up. I'm biased because obviously I make those for money. But I just don't see where a written review of a game report is at all applicable in 2020. I don't get it. Socials work. So more of a vocal presence on the socials. And this is going back to more podcast stuff, but you can become popular with a regular and lively voice on Twitter and Instagram and things like that. It has to be organic. I see some basketball outlets with 30 or 40,000 followers on Twitter or like or more, and then they'll link to their content and it'll get 10 likes, 10 to 20 interactions, and I'm like, you got 30,000 followers and only 10 are clicking on your stuff. The NBL Pocket Podcast has 1,000, and most of the tweets get not a lot, but anywhere from similar, 5 to 10. If it's a picture or a video, it's normally up in the sort of 20 or so. That's a bit exaggerated, but I only have 1,000. If you had 30,000, I would have thought every interaction you'd have would have at least a couple of hundred. You know, but that's it's just not what happens. So I think a lot of those, I just don't think those follows could be real. Now, why you want to invest in Twitter or fake it, I don't know. Twitter to me seems like a total waste of time. It's a nice little way to get a bit of advertising for free. But, you know, I got 1,000 followers and nothing. The numbers of the podcast listens didn't really change from when I had 1,000 followers to when I had, you know, 350. So Twitter's a bit of fun, but I ultimately think it's empty calories. Going forward, how does the NBL grow in my very shitty little opinion, just doing a simple podcast? Number one, get along with the AFL, and more importantly, its schedule. Get out from underneath its schedule. It'll kill you. The AFL will cannibalize and crush the NBL like a paper cup if they wanted to. You know, the game kind of, as in when I say the game, the NBL grew very well alongside and with the aid of the AFL. In a 6-hour long chat I had with Ken Cole, which I've never released because it needs a lot of work, I didn't record it in the best quality, we spoke, or probably more accurately, he spoke, about involving the people high up within that code. He had a lot to do with the Adelaide football crowd, AFL, Aussie Rules crowd, and it worked to the betterment of that team, and they had AFL guys courtside, and you know, the two sports kind of, well, one grew, one didn't need to grow, one was massive, but you know, the NBL kind of grew alongside it, or at least the Adelaide 36ers grew alongside it, and you know, they were working in tandem, and they're a powerful friend to have. The other thing I'd say is invest in the community. The clubs aren't hands-on enough with the media or their constituents. Now, that's only, I can't speak for Perth, I can't speak for Adelaide, Cairns, Brisbane, all those, but I don't live there, don't interact with it. But I'm speaking from a Sydney perspective, and the Kings are a non-factor. And I'm a big believer, you know, they say you've got the, when you look at a city, if you want to see if a city's on the move and whether it's growing, they do what they call the skyscraper count. And they're like, oh, there's 25 skyscrapers across the city of Seattle, you know, building's good. You know, that's up from 12 6 months ago, or whatever. I do the same thing with sports, but I look at merch, and merch not on game day. And yeah, I've been in Sydney a couple of years now, and I ride the rail a lot, and I have seen, I remember the day I saw it, it was only just recently, one Sydney Kings cap. And, you know, I probably ride the rail 2 times a day for maybe an hour and a half to 2 hours a day. I've seen one cap in a couple of years. There's no pulse. There's no pulse there. And maybe I'm not their target demographic in the community. Maybe they skew younger. I don't know, but if it's not at the game or people in transit to the game, I don't see their logo. I don't see announcements for that team. You are out there listening from the other cities. You tell me if it's different. If it is different and more hands up, fantastic. Just my experience. TV. We talk about the NBL growth. TV. Man, tough. And we had Body on, Andrew and I. We spoke about this. The A-League have nipped the NBL at the post for Channel 10 rights. $200 million over 5 years. That's long-term, decent money commitment. The Stan, the one that now the NBL is kind of hoping just for Stan, that's only going to be $20 million annually. So that's half of what the A-League is going to get from Channel 10. That's a blow. That's a body blow. And it just seems to me it's a resounding vote of no confidence in the NBL and maybe its media ops, because the A-League is not setting the world on fire. It's not hugely followed, although some games are pretty big. I mean, Sydney versus Sydney Wanderers, that'll get, you know, 50,000 people or something, maybe more. There's huge crowds to that. And, you know, there's a couple of good rivalries that really take off. The NBL doesn't have that. So maybe that's what tipped over the A-League, or the Channel 10 to go with the A-League, maybe. But I still feel if they had gone, no, basketball's the way forward, we think there's an investment in this, we want to be a part of the NBL domestic basketball experience, they'd be in. If they like the personalities, they'd be in. They're not in. So I smell something. And it ain't an Emmy. But, you know, here's the other thing. What gets on TV is not just about numbers, it's about demographic. If it was all about numbers and money-making, esports would be on in primetime. And this is kind of hearsay because I don't have the exact numbers on it, but more people turned up to an esports event in Melbourne than they did to the Australian Open final one year. They were on the same night, and more people went to this esports event than the Australian Open. Now, I don't know what that esports event was. Maybe that was like a one-off aberration, but still, like, that's the Australian Open. That's a Grand Slam tournament, and more people. So, you know, the problem is most of these channels are run by older. I don't want to talk about race, but older, presumably Caucasian guys who love their cricket, their rugby, tennis, sailing. I don't know, whatever the fuck. Esport doesn't serve their lifestyle or their ego. They don't want to invest in esports. Even if it makes them more money, they're like, I don't get to rub shoulders with guys I want to watch on TV. Maybe they just can't get it. But if you're looking at a pure numbers thing, esports are being prime time. So when I bringing that back to the NBL, you need to, you know, if the son or daughter of the owner of a TV station loved basketball, have a guess what'll be on basketball twice a week. Know what I mean? Stan remains an option, but the problem is this, and we spoke about it before with Andrew about and Body, that, you know, it gets you it doesn't get you a passive audience, right? A passive audience is an audience where if the NBL started after the news, people who'd never seen basketball before would watch the news, forget to change the channel, and fall into the NBL and be like, oh, okay, never seen this before, here we go. Whereas Stan is a more active audience. People have bought a subscription. You have to click on content. It doesn't automatically play for you, you know. So people are searching it out. So you don't get that just mass appeal. But anyway, the other problem is the NBL is played in prime time. Basketball is played in the evenings at 7:30 p.m. It is trying to occupy prime TV real estate. That's prime time. That's prime time for movies. That's prime time for other sports. That's prime time for going to dinner. That's prime time. You got to be Hollywood to be on at 7:30 p.m. on even a weekday, let alone a weekend. I'm serious when I say two things. Can basketball or the NBL be played in the morning or early afternoon? But not on a weekend. So you can't have early afternoon on a weekend because then you run up against the AFL. Although in summer, maybe that's more of an option. But can it be played in the morning? I don't know. That probably wouldn't work either because, you know, people can't physically go to the game. But if you had TV, maybe it's worth it. I don't know. Or can only the fourth quarter be shown? We had this idea on here. Fourth quarter sports where you just drop into the NBL for the fourth quarter. And it's just a half hour. And it basically is a salve for that issue that maybe there's not a appetite for 2 hours of domestic basketball in Australia. You know, you can't have an ego about yourself. You got to know where you sit at. Barring all that, I'd start small. A half-hour basketball show that split 50-50 with the NBA and the NBL and done really well and integrate the two. I'd be tapping Matt Logue on the shoulder to work on this one. It has to be fun as well as informative, but it has to be different from stuff in the US. If it's just inside the NBA, but Australian and not as high budget, it's not going to work. It's got to be something really, really different. And you've got to get players involved in it. You've got to get big names. You've got to get real talent. You've got to be involved. You've got to really stress to the players, like, no. Don't just give cliche answers on this one. Be fun. Be funny. Be engaging. And that's tough. It's really, really tough. It's a whole separate skill to play in basketball, but I just think half-hour show, Saturday morning, get it at the kids or something that touches on both, and it should be high octane and it has to have the NBA with it just to drive up the numbers, just so you can steal some of that NBA audience who are like, yeah, the NBA is my primary basketball viewership, but I'll give the NBL a go. You know, it'd be like cordial. 8/10 water is the NBA. 2/10 cordial, that's my NBL. And you start doing that, you got something. Here we go. We've come to the end. We're almost an hour. Fuck, my voice is... Sorry for the language, everyone. My voice is dying. Oh, dear me. Coming to the end of all this. Barely begs the question, will the NBL Pocket Podcast go next season? Still debating it. We'll reassess. But the main takeaway from this episode is this. Start your own podcast. Start your own podcast, whether it's about the NBL, gardening, books, scratching yourself, sailing, origami, postage stamps, stamp collecting, whatever we want to do. Start your own podcast because you'll enjoy it. It's an enjoyable subculture to get involved in. But The other piece of advice I give is be consistent. If you're a weekly show, put out a show a week. Don't ever fall short of that. If you do a show a week every Tuesday, put it out every Tuesday. And if you can't, if it's hell high water, you can't do Tuesday, then you do Wednesday morning. Put out a show. You'd rather be, if you know that weekly is not going to work for you, don't strive to do it weekly, do it bi-weekly, but make sure you hit your targets without fail. You need that consistency or people drop off. The other thing I'll say is have a Patreon, and have a Patreon from day one. It's a good little way to turn it, just to get something through the till, get something through the turnstile, feels good. It's like we said before, you're straight away starting a little avenue to get paid. It may not be lucrative, it may not be a deep trough, but you are putting a track down. A train will not run without a track. Patreon is putting a track down. Be selling something that you produce yourself. You know, so if you're doing a show about books, a podcast about books, have a book about podcasts that you're selling for a fiver. If you're serious about, you know, being entrepreneurial, if you want to just have fun, have fun. Do that and you can put out any crap you want. And all you need is a $10 subscription to Audio Boom. You don't even, if you want to just have total fun, you don't even have to have nice microphones. You can just put out basically a migraine in audio form and just go for it. Yeah, have fun with it. Why not? My one piece of advice is just don't do a podcast on the NBL. No, I'm kidding. But, you know, whatever you do, do it something original. Try and find an undernourished audience. You know, an NBL show that's for female fans. I think that would rate quite well. Or at least, if nothing else, it would be different. And it would go at an undernourished audience with international appeal. But that's the only thing I'll say is try and get something with international appeal. If you just go after an Australian thing, you're going to struggle. Also, go for both genders and go for all age groups. You know, there, if you do those things, if you go for international appeal, both men and women, and you have, you know, you don't cuss like I just did and get ages, you know, 10 to 80, you know, that's a big audience base to have a stab at and have fun with. Guys, boom, done. I've lost my voice. My throat is dry. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. I hope it's been informative and helpful. And hopefully, see you next season. Before I go, though, some front of house stuff. If you like this episode, become a Patreon. Appreciate that. If you're going to buy a book, do it from Booktopia. They're not bad. Their affiliate program's a little light on, but they're good people nonetheless. And I would say buy a couple of them, Marvelous, but I sold them all, so sit on it. Thanks very much, everyone. Ciao.